Welcome to the Comicast, Ireland's number one comic podcast. I'm Liam.
I'm Craig.
And we're here with an absolutely spiffing...
Dynamite
show, interview show with none other than...
Jeffrey Lewis, who is a musician and also a comic book artist and writer.
Yes.
His new album just came out. It's called MRI.
Yes.
Which is a silly title, and we didn't ask him about it.
No, because it was too hard to remember. Yeah. MRI.
Yeah. And well, the way I remember is MRI, like the... those medical machines that they use in all those medical shows.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm with you now. That's MRIs, good. Yeah. That's good.
Maybe that's where it came up from. It came from the title.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Named after a Grey's Anatomy machine.
Yeah, exactly. So, we talked to Jeffrey Lewis about basically about comic stuff. We didn't get into the music stuff too much, which might have seemed a little insulting since that's how he makes the majority of his money these days.
As he says, he started out as a comics person first. Mm. But just for anyone who doesn't know, we'll give a quick briefing, is that Jeffrey Lewis is from New York, is kind of like on the anti-folk music scene with people like...
Adam Green, Moldy Peaches, Kimmy Dawson,
those kind of people.
And he's done some songs with some of them people.
Yeah, and I have like... huge fan of of his music. It's great.
Definitely. And we're lesser fans of his comic work.
That's ridiculous. Why are you saying that?
But we do like his comics.
Yes. Anyway, we went down to Crawdaddy just to catch him before soundcheck. We went in and this is what happened. Hello and welcome to the Comicast. We're here in Crawdaddy. Yep. I'm Liam.
I'm Craig.
And we are here with Jeffrey Lewis.
Hey.
How are you, sir?
Doing well.
Doing good. Just did soundcheck?
Yeah, here at the Crawdaddy, which I guess is sort of the same building as the Tripod.
Yes.
It's
confusing. So you're like a songwriter and a comic book artist. Which came first?
I've basically been doing comics my whole life, and music is relatively recent compared to that, but music has just kind of snowballed unexpectedly and become this whole bigger thing, I guess partially because music is such a bigger part of people's lives than comic books are. But it's been a great way to get my comics out to people, because there's so many people that know me through the music that come to the shows and then see the comics, or come to my website and then see the comics, so it's been a good crossover effect.
Have you been able to like convert many people like through that?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of the people that are, you know, that follow my comic series now are probably people that came to it through knowing the music first, and that's great because music has such a wider outreach than comic books do, just in terms of people experiencing it in society. Music is a part of everybody's lives, and comic books are usually just a tiny little margin of culture.
Yeah. How did you start? What did you start reading when you were small, or how did you kind of get into it when you were small?
I'm not really even sure how I first got into it. I was definitely learned how to read reading comic books, so it was from a pretty young age. And for some weird reason, the first character that I really wanted to find, and you know, that I read just random issues of whatever I happened to find at the newsstand, the Hulk or Spider-Man or things like that. But the first character that really appealed to me that I wanted to specifically find the next issue, and I was excited when the next issue would come out, was Rom Space Knight, who was sort of obscure Marvel character, which I don't really know why that one appealed to me more than the other ones.
When you started out, like, which comics did you start doing? Presumably Fuff wasn't your first kind of comic that you were putting out. Presumably you put like other ones out before that.
Yeah, I mean, this current Fuff series has only been the last few years. I've done a bunch of stuff before that. I don't know, a lot of that stuff is just kind of out of print. I mean, I was just doing like photocopied copies, and I'd maybe do, I guess when I was in college, I would do maybe like 200 copies of a comic if I was doing it. And I was working at the print shop in my college, so I could make free photocopies. And, so that was sort of, that was good for that sort of thing. I think before that I hadn't made copies of the comics I was making, like in high school and junior high. I probably just, you know, drew them and would show them to people. But the idea of like actually making copies of them and trying to sell them to people was something that happened a little later. And then, you know, as I started playing music and it was like making 200 copies and folding them and stapling them was just getting to be too much of a hassle, and I started needing to make more and more copies as I was touring more and selling more, and it was like, okay, now I got to make 500 copies, and it was just a huge chore to put all the pages together and fold and staple. And once it got up to making 1,000 copies, I just started having enough, you know, paying a place to do it, and then it actually ends up being a lot cheaper once you start doing 2,000, 3,000 copies of something. It ends up being so much cheaper to just send it off and have somebody else do it in bulk. Cheaper and infinitely easier to just get boxes of finished, folded, stapled comics arriving at your door rather than lugging pages back from the photocopy place to assemble.
And in number four, I think it was, there's a great opening story that I like about just about how, you know, all the kind of comics that, you know, that everybody loves, you know, that there's never any kind of consistency in output from a lot of these people, you know, like Joe Madden, you know, Adrian Tomine and stuff. Why do you think that is? Joe Madden seems to like convey himself as like a really lazy guy anyway, so I can understand that. But
well, that was the funniest thing in this one issue of Peep Show that was, I think, a couple issues ago. It took like 3 years or something for this next issue of Peep Show to come out, and in the letters page, there was a little comic that he did that was like, oh, I've had this whole issue of Peep Show ready to go for 3 years. I'm just waiting for one more letter to arrive to fill in the letters page. Finally, I got another letter. But it's true that a lot of these people, for some reason in the 90s, were able to crank the stuff out with more consistency. I mean, Chester Brown and all these folks, it seems like you could go to a comic store and actually expect to find a new issue of 8-Ball or of, you know, Peep Show or any of these things. And then I'm not sure if it was like the lure of Hollywood, like these people started doing movies, or maybe the industry, I think, just kind of died a bit. Maybe they weren't making as much money with it and had to start doing more freelance illustration, or I don't know what. I could see where they potentially just got burnt out because they were doing so much awesome work for a bunch of years there, and, you know, maybe they were younger and like didn't care that they were slaving away, and I have no idea. But whatever it is, the last 10 years, it seems like it's been, a lot of those people that I really loved in the '90s have just been I don't know what they've been doing. They haven't been doing much.
I was going to ask you actually about comic book adaptations and what your kind of feeling was, because I seen like in one of the editions of Fuff about how you kind of nearly illustrated a comic version of Macbeth. I think it was, but you know, what do you make of them in general? Because I know they put out a lot now of Shakespeare.
Comic book adaptations of things that were originally originally books or plays or things like that. Well, I suppose in certain situations there could be fun interpretations of things. I'm trying to think of some good examples. I mean, the Classics Illustrated series that goes back, like, decades, that was always a way to get kids to read classics. They would have, A Tale of Two Cities done in comic book form or something. I don't know if it's necessarily a good translation. I suppose maybe some of them might have been better than others, but I really can't think of any examples that spring to mind as being particularly good uses of the comic book form. I don't know.
Yeah, I was wondering that, When do you get time to write your comics? You do when you're on tour? Is that hard being on a bus drawing comics? That might be.
We're usually just in a little car, I find it very hard to get any work done on the road. I mean, I get car sick if I'm trying to write or draw while in the car, and it's just very hard to have the kind of concentration that's needed to work on a comic book, because usually it just requires hours and hours, day after day. Of time alone thinking about stuff, or time alone at a drawing desk drawing it. It's just a very meditative, isolated process, which is just impossible on tour. Even if I have an hour here or an hour there, I find it really hard to get into the right headspace, because it's sort of like you can be interrupted at any given minute. Somebody says, we have to do this, or we have to move the car, or we have to, you know, sound check, or I have to, I don't know, change a string on my guitar. So there's always like something else that could pop in at any minute. So it's really hard to even get, to get myself into the mindset where, like, I can be thinking about that stuff
Obviously, you do all your kind of like artwork for your own albums and things, and you did like some of the artwork for like the Moldy Peaches albums and that. Do you still do like kind of other jobs, as it were, you know, other illustration kind of jobs? Or?
Yeah, I mean, usually I haven't. It's been years since I actually put the energy into seeking out freelance illustration work. Nowadays, because I'm able to make my living with the music and comic stuff, mostly with the music stuff, but. It just doesn't. It's not a good use of my time to seek illustration work because it takes some. You have to like, you know, really proposition a whole bunch of different places before any work actually comes through. So I do illustration work if it comes to me. I mean, once in a while somebody will email me to hire me for one thing or another, or different friends' albums. I always like contributing artwork to. I did the artwork for Kimya Dawson's "Remember That I Love You" album, and Doofus, a band that I really like in New York. I just did a very elaborate fold-out comic thing for their new album. It's called In Monstrous Attitude. Yeah, stuff like that is always fun to do.
I think we read somewhere, I'm not sure if this is true, that you did your like thesis on Watchmen.
Yeah, actually I've been lecturing on Watchmen lately. Wow. It's been a good addition to my touring, in addition to like sort of touring doing music, I've been touring doing these lectures on Watchmen, sort of drawing from my old senior thesis. I was a literature major in college, and it was my literature senior thesis, just kind of dissecting Watchmen and a lot of the hidden themes and meanings that are in there. And especially with the hype surrounding the movie this year, it's just been a great time to kind of cash in on my old project and bring it back out. And the audiences have been, you know, it's just been great to be able to do a totally different kind of appearance. I did some lectures in London, and I've done them in Belgium and on the west coast of the States and in New York, and I just did a few in Australia a couple of weeks ago. And it's really interesting to kind of, then it's kind of the opposite effect, because then it's like I'm doing these in bookstores or in comic stores, and I'm kind of also telling people, oh, by the way, I do music also, and I kind of have the CDs there. So it's kind of the opposite of my usual. It's an interesting way to combine comics with performance. It's sort of like a performance about comics rather than about music.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's been good. It's just a shame that there aren't more comics like Watchmen that are worthy of that kind of examination. I mean, it kind of still stands alone.
What did you make of the movie?
It was definitely, you know, as good a movie as one could expect. I was really sort of pleasantly surprised. It wasn't, considering how totally unwatchably bad some of the other Alan Moore-derived movies were. I mean, From Hell was just so bad, and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen supposedly is even worse. V for Vendetta wasn't too bad, but Watchmen was definitely better. But, you know, obviously as a comic, it's one of the greatest comics of all time, and as a movie, it's not like it's one of the greatest movies of all time. It's interesting as a curiosity, but I do wonder what people who haven't read the comic would make of the movie.
Yeah.
I wonder how it stands on its own, just as a movie.
A couple of years ago, you did like Also, put out like a collector's kind of box set thing, you know, with a DVD of and CD and some posters and stuff of your work. But you had to do like an individual illustration for like over 500, you know, boxes. Like that must have been crazy.
It was actually really fun because it was a way to add value to the... Because it was so expensive to produce... This little label in London did this project of a limited edition box set. So it had 2 7-inch vinyls of unreleased songs, and it had a DVD of some interview and live stuff, and it had some stickers, and they did a really nice job putting it together. They proposed this project of a sort of special limited edition box, and it was going to have to sell for something like... I forget what it was, like £40 or something like that.
Yeah.
And as an idea of a way to make it more valuable without having to spend more money to produce more stuff to put in the box, because if we had made more posters or more music or DVD content, that all would have cost money to manufacture. But a cheap way to add more value was just to throw some original art in, which almost is the most valuable part about it.
Yeah.
So then I was, you know, I just had to crank out hundreds and hundreds of these color drawings to put in, and it was actually an interesting psychological experiment to see what I would draw when I don't have any time to think about it. And I just had to like just do one after the other, after the other, after the other, and it was kind of funny for me to see what themes kept popping up or what characters kept reappearing.
What was the main kind of theme that did start to crop up?
it's more like the like a certain, oh, I don't even know, a certain like take on reality that has I don't even know what to call it. I mean, I did scan in a couple hundred of the drawings before all the boxes got sold. So on my website, you can see a couple hundred of them. And they actually, I feel like they work better together than separate. I kind of feel like somebody who just bought one of the box sets and got whatever drawing they got without seeing the other, you know, 499 drawings. I feel like they're most interesting as a huge batch of these random images, and you know they all have like they're all sort of comic booky drawings with little word balloons and things. And then at a certain point, towards the end of my rope, I the last bunch of them I did as an animation. I was like, well, if I have to do another, you know, whatever it is, 100 or 200, I should at least do some kind of thing that would just be an animation piece. So a lot of people just got pieces that like. Don't really make that much sense on their own anyway.
I have that, and I have like two. There's actually two illustration pieces in mine, and they were from that. I was wondering, has that been made like into a?
I used it as part of the montage film that we were doing about a year and a half ago when we toured with the 12 Crass Songs album. We had we sort of put together a film montage just running off of my laptop into a projector that we'd project behind us, where we sent out to our email list a request for fans to send in 30-second clips or 1 minute or 2 minutes of any footage they wanted, stuff that they had made themselves, short films or animations or old TV commercials they found online or any kind of interesting stuff. And we just took it all and randomly assembled it into this, you know, however long it was. Just this, so that while we were performing behind us, it would just kind of keep switching from one short clip to another in random sequence. And of course, since we play different sets every night, the way that it would correspond with what we were playing created these accidental juxtapositions that were sometimes totally amazing and you know, just weirdly coincidental, like images would pop up that matched what was going on in the song, and it was different every night. And one of the things that was thrown into the montage was that animation that came out of that. Which was actually never finished. I still, because the boxes ran out, and what I wanted to have happen in the animation hadn't quite completed itself yet. I feel like at some point I should do the remaining, 200 drawings that will need to finish that little animation idea, and then probably put it on my website or something if I ever get to it.
I was wondering if you ever have any ideas that perhaps where it's going to be a song and then you change it to a comic or vice versa, because a lot of songs seem to be kind of narrative based.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the songs are narratives, and then some of the comics rhyme, so there's a lot of times I'll just jot ideas down in the back of my sketchbook, and whether it's for a certain rhyme or a certain story idea, I don't know necessarily whether it's going to end up in a comic or in a song, because they do kind of, it could sort of go either way.
On that, you kind of like, what's the best way of describing this? Kind of like illustrate some of your songs while on stage for people who haven't seen you, like with kind of big scrapbooks of artwork. Like, how did that come about?
I call them low budget videos, and it's just kind of, I have about 30 of them now, or 20 something, of these songs that have these big color illustrations that go along with it, so that while I'm singing the song, I'm showing drawings that go with it instead of playing guitar that goes with it. And that just kind of, it was just an idea from a few years ago that once I started doing it, I was like, wow, there's so much more I could do with this. It really, really works well for me. So usually every show I do one or two of those. And now I have them in my laptop also, so I don't have to carry all the books around. I usually carry like the most recent one or two books, and then I have the other like couple dozen of them just stored in the laptop that I can project, which keeps them safe, because usually on tour the books start falling apart pretty quickly.
I also read somewhere that you're a big fan of zombie movies, so I wanted to ask, can there ever be like too many zombie comics?
Well, I've never been that like excited about a zombie comic, I guess. I can't really think of and I guess there's probably a lot of them now, and there's definitely been a resurgence in interest in zombies in the last few years. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know of any zombie comics are there any that you're thinking of specifically? I know there's a whole lot. There was like an Evil Dead series or something. Oh yeah, yeah. I haven't read that stuff.
But, it's good. Yeah. It's good. I guess to wrap up. What comics are you reading at the minute? What would you recommend?
I'm really into, there's a woman named Gabrielle Bell who does a comic called Lucky, that I really like, and it's I think it comes out on Drawing Quarterly puts it out, and a guy in Texas who does a comic called Snake Pit that I discovered when I was living in Texas a few years ago. I was briefly living there, and I would just pick it up at the local record store. It was just kind of like a mini comic zine, and I would kind of follow it as much as I could, and then he sort of got picked up by a bigger company and then a bigger company, so I can now find them distributed all around the states, and they're sort of in regular comic format now. I can get them in New York, and it's autobiographical stuff, but it's very he just has a very funny approach to it, he sort of does three panels every day, like, and they're almost all exactly the same. It's like, I went to work, I came home, I got drunk, and for some reason it's very addictive, and it's very it's hard to explain, but Snake Pit is the name of it, and it's just been one of my favorites for years. And anything that Joe Sacco does is always great, but he you know, it's not that often that he comes out with stuff. I thought the all the stuff about Bosnia was amazing, and I think he's probably got something new coming out soon, but that Safe Area Garajda book was really incredible. You know, and basically anything, if Dan Klaus comes out with anything or Alan Moore comes out with anything, I'll always pick it up. The new League of Extraordinary Gentlemen stuff, I guess that's some recent stuff.
Cool. Well, good luck with the gig tonight, and thanks very much for talking to us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks. Hope it all comes out okay.
We're back. So that was Jeffrey Lewis. He spoke about some stuff.
He did.
We didn't speak about some other stuff. Yeah, Jeffrey Lewis, pretty nice guy. Really nice guy. A bit socially awkward.
As are we.
We were very social.
Which was an absolutely fantastic match of people who just walked into a room and had nothing to say to each other whatsoever.
And then once the interview started, we were kind of okay. And then as soon as the interview stopped, like, again, silence emerged between us and we just sort of walked away.
Yes, it was good. It was good. I should say I stuck around for the gig that night. It was really good.
Yeah,
it was, because I think that's the fifth time I've seen Jeffrey Lewis.
Yeah.
In Crawdaddy, and the first three gigs were amazing. Yeah. The last one wasn't so good.
Yeah.
But this one was fantastic. He played loads of great songs, and actually this time I remember more than other times, like, the whole room kind of hushed to actually listen. I usually stand at the back, because I'm near the bar.
Yes.
That way, and usually I'm the one making noise. But I was hushed too, because everyone else was hushed. But definitely check out Jeffrey Lewis's music.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And his comics as well, of course.
Yeah. I was gonna say, did you get to speak to Jeffrey Lewis after the gig or anything?
I actually meant to, because he did say to us that he'd be hanging around the comic table later. No, I quite simply didn't. I did try and buy a Jeffrey Lewis t-shirt while he was on stage, and there was one of the support bands were there. This kid, like, he looked like he was around 10, and he was just like, you'll have to come back later when Mr. Lewis is here, because I don't know where the cash box is. So I got drunk and I forgot to come back. Yes.
So I guess we just got a little bit of news we're gonna talk about now, I guess.
We don't usually do this,
but it was a short interview and we missed a load of stuff in our last podcast.
Yes, wow.
So Will Sliney's Farscape is out and it looks great. Will showed me a few pages when I interviewed him for the Eclectic Mix, and I used the term interview there like extremely loosely, as in I spoke more, around him.
Yes, or you could use the word farce. It would be more apt.
Absolutely. And if you search online, I've seen a good few preview pages out there. It looks amazing. Some of the best stuff Will has done, or indeed anyone has ever done in the history of comics. It looks really good. I don't really have much of an interest in Farscape. Well, not that I don't have any interest. I just don't know.
I'm not familiar with it.
So when I pick up this comic, it shall be my first initiation into Farscape, and I hope it's good. I think Will is saying they're bringing back the TV show, or they're talking about bringing back
The
TV show. So, I mean, hopefully.
Yeah, because I'm led to believe, I may be entirely wrong, but I think Jim Henson does the creatures for it.
Okay.
So, is unbelievable that I haven't seen it.
Then. Yeah, that sounds really unlikely.
Because anything that says Jim Henson's, I will watch. Yeah. I'm sure I'm actually...
Even that other Jim Henson, sometimes you get confused.
Yeah. Brilliant.
We have other eclectic mix
news? We do. More eclectic mix news. fucking hell. But this is a bit of... I'm going to call this an exclusive, because I haven't seen this mentioned anywhere on any blogs or anything. This is the album cover of Super Extra Bonus Party, who are an awesome band, buddies of ours, well, we may
acquaintance.
Say.
Acquaintances.
Good acquaintances of ours.
You did a video for one of their songs.
Yes, I did. And so their new album, Night Horses, the album artwork was done by none other than Stephen Mooney.
Which one's Mooney again?
Mooney is the one...
Which one does Angel?
I don't know. Don't ask me. You know what? I was commenting on one of the drawings on the Eclectic Mix blog.
Yeah.
And it was a drawing by... it was a drawing of a dragon from an 80s movie. And it was actually by Stephen Thompson.
Okay.
And I just went on and went, hey, great drawing, Mooney. And, you know. Yeah.
Wonders to change their names. I know their work when I see it. I wouldn't have made that mistake.
Yes.
But all right. I just can't remember which one's name is which.
Yeah, it's confusing. So, you know. Anyway, back to the artwork. Yes, Stephen Mooney has done an awesome, genuinely awesome
cover
for Night Horses. It's like a horse in a spacesuit, and he's got lasers.
And he's shooting at some guys. It's kind of like Buck Rogers or something.
Absolutely. The album's out in May, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
And you can download them. The album's great, by the way, anyway.
It's really good.
You can download like a free track from the album on superxbonusparty.com's website. And I don't know if they have... They must have the album cover up. We'll link it up.
I've seen it on 909.com.
Anyway. All right. We'll link that up anyway. Yes. Do we have something else?
Yes. Declan Shalvey's recently announced that he's going to be doing the artwork for Boom Studios 28 Days Later.
Wow.
Which is...
That's pretty impressive.
That is. We're both big fans of 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
The movie. So hopefully... yeah. As opposed to the musical.
And the play.
Yeah.
And the... yes.
But I was thinking 28 Weeks Later, of which neither of us are fans, I'm sure.
Mm.
So hopefully Dr. Shelley doesn't do that. If this goes well. But yeah, that looks really good. As you were saying off air, I believe that Declan has said that that's going to be pushing Sweeney Todd back a bit, or he won't be working as much on Sweeney Todd.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. I read that on his blog. Yeah,
So cool. I can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be great. The great thing about it is, like, since I seen like the zombies in Tim Skinner, that page with all his like pirate zombies and space zombies, I've been itching for him to do a zombie comic. I would have preferred if it was like space zombies or pirate zombies.
Maybe you could sneak a few in.
Yeah, oh man, do it, Declan, if you're listening. Put a pirate zombie in. Be brilliant.
Yeah. Is that all the Irish news?
No. Well, one more thing is that a new comic store has opened. Well, a new branch of an already existing comic store, which is Sub City.
Yeah.
They have a new store off Dame Street in Cow's Lane.
Yeah.
It's where Versus used to be. Versus being the illustration t-shirt shop where illustrators battle it out. But it's gone now. I don't know where that's gone. But yeah, it's an awesome shop. I went down there, had a chat with Rob.
Yeah.
Didn't buy anything.
You don't want to be supporting new comic shops.
Yeah, well, I feel like, awkward.
I'll just go buy it on Amazon, Rob. It's cheaper there.
Brilliant. But it's a great new shop.
Yeah, hopefully I get to pop in tomorrow.
Yeah, and there was actually, like, because I was originally thinking, it seems further away than it actually is.
Yeah.
And even when I was in there was loads of people in there.
Oh, yeah?
Excellent. Yeah, so check it out.
Compared size-wise to the old subsidy.
It's bigger.
Yeah. By how much?
I don't know, maybe...
25%?
3% Three subsidies. Three of the normal subsidies.
Oh, wow, it's really big.
It's, well, maybe I'm...
Well, like, the other subsidy was pretty small.
Yeah.
But three of them together would be pretty big. We're talking, like, the Dancer's Forbidden Planet, that size? Bigger than that?
Yeah, around that size, I guess.
That's pretty big.
You heard it. I am
glad
you're
not an architect. So other news. I've got to talk briefly about the Wolverine movie.
Oh, yes. Which I went to see. Absolutely, yes.
It's pretty good, I'm going to say. I know this is not the held opinion. And I should state for the record that I quite liked the third X-Men movie, even though everybody in the entire world hated that movie. I think the reason for this and the reason I like X-Men Origins Wolverine is because I don't really have any affection for the characters, except really the cartoon series is the only sort of X-Men nostalgia I have. So Gambit's in this, and Gambit was in the cartoon series, so immediately I'm like, this is great. But, you know, it's actually pretty good. It's getting a lot of harsh reviews. Like, you know, it's not Shakespeare, don't get me wrong, or anywhere close. And the story's cack, But it's basically Wolverine goes around and fights a different mutant every scene. And the fight scenes are all pretty good. Gambit's really cool. Now, I hear lots of people are like hating on Gambit for some reason, but maybe because he's like 13 years old in this or whatever, but he's played by a guy, Taylor Kitsch or something, but he's in Friday Night Lights, which is one of my favourite TV shows.
Okay.
And so I like that guy, and he's pretty good in this. Even though, I'm pretty sure the whole point of this movie, by the way, I know I'm just sort of going back and forth, is that... Just to throw as many X-Men characters as possible into a movie and see what sticks, see which ones we can spin off into their own series. Because I don't think they're ever going to go back to the X-Men franchise after how bad X-Men 3 was. Admittedly, like I said, I liked it, but everyone else hated it.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart returns in this de-aged like an X-Men 3. Do you remember where they did the CG? Except it looked good in X-Men 3, and now he just looks like... It looks like they got a mannequin of Patrick Stewart and just put him there, especially because he only talks psychically, so his mouth never moves. I think he might be entirely CG. I don't know if he...
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure brilliant. If he turned up for the shoot at all. Yeah. He's like got like one line.
It'd be great if he wasn't paid either, that they just
CG'd him. We own the CG model of you from the third movie, and they just reuse clips of his voice. Like,
and they use him in milk commercials now as well.
Yeah, awesome. So I'd recommend, like, if you go see it, I wouldn't say you're going to be too disappointed unless you're one of these people, you know, the Harry Potter fans are particularly fond
neurotic.
Of this. Yeah, exactly. You've changed something, so this I can't enjoy it because I need it to be exactly the way it was in the source material, which is, in fairness, that's a valid enough point. But I think you should know going into this or into a Harry Potter movie as well. Like, if you're expecting everything from, you're going to be disappointed. You're setting yourself up for disappointment.
Yes.
So... if you're one of those people, don't go. Other than that, I'd say have a good time. One thing I want to mention about this is that it has, after the credits, it has, you know, an ending, a secret ending. But there's, in fact, three different ones, depending on what cinema you go to see this in.
That is crazy.
That's how it worked in America. I don't know over here. I didn't actually stay till the end because I didn't know about this until I left cinema.
Okay.
So there is a chance, I guess, that maybe over here they drew all three in or they just picked one of them. But... on the off chance that they didn't do that, and that you do have to go to watch it three times in three different cinemas to catch
in America,
all the endings, in America to catch all the endings, or YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm going to spoil them all for you right here because they're not very spoilerish. And again, the plot in this movie is paper thin. It's really poor, in fact. So ending the first, Wolverine is in a bar in Japan, and that's it. And Frank Miller and Chris Claremont did a kind of Wolverine. Origin thing set in Japan a while back, so it kind of looks like maybe it's setting that up as a sequel to X-Men Origins Wolverine,
okay.
Which would be good, I guess. The second one is like the bad guy who they fight at the end. Wolverine kills him by cutting his head off, which isn't a spoiler because if the whole way through the movie, everyone he meets, he says, "I'm going to cut your head off." So by the time he does it to someone, you're actually just like, "Oh, thank God he did it," because he said it to everyone. Like, even just like, you know, this old nice old guy is giving him all like, "I'm going to cut your head off." So, but so he kills Bad Guy by cutting his head off, and at the end of this movie, the disembodied body is sort of kind of like a Frankenstein or a mummy that has lost his head, wanders around and finds his head. So I know. I've only read this, I haven't seen it, so I don't know how bad it looks.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It sounds atrocious.
Very bad.
And the third one is, it just shows Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool, who you kind of think is dead by the end of the movie, and it just shows him looking regular instead of in the movie he gets his face sewn shut, which is an absolutely brilliant idea for Ryan Reynolds, and it should be done in every subsequent Ryan Reynolds movie, and in fact as a DVD extra for re-releases of every previous Ryan Reynolds movie.
And he should do like directors or commentaries, actors commentaries with his mouth sewn shut.
So that looks like setting up a kind of Deadpool spin-off movie, which I hope never takes off the ground. I hope anyone involved in that project dies in a horrific plane crash. So it's pretty good. Go see it. One thing I should have mentioned earlier, Liv Schreiber plays Sabretooth, Wolverine's nemesis in this. And he's really good, like really good in it. I've never thought of him as a good actor. And it's surprising that a movie with a script as bad as X-Men Origins Wolverine made me realise he can even kind of pull off really bad dialogue and make it sound good. So I was really impressed by him in the movie. And him and Hugh Jackman just seem to be having like a really good time. There's a really good chemistry between them, not a homosexual chemistry, although maybe a little. And also...
that was a fourth scene added on at the end.
Just for the European audience. Yeah. The Americans couldn't handle it. And finally, to go back to the very start of the movie, there's kind of this montage of, because Wolverine is so old because he has his healing factor, which won't let him age. So the movie starts in like 1840, and there's like this montage up until the start of the movie, which is, I don't know, it doesn't say, but like the 90s or the 80s.
Okay.
So it shows Wolverine and Liv Schreiber in like the American Civil War, and then you know, in World War II, and in, you know, and Vietnam, and all these really cool war scenes. And this opening shot is maybe like 2 minutes long, and I'd say it must have cost like the pretty much 3/4 of the budget. Just like full fledged like war scenes, all the costumes, like hundreds of extras, just for these like 5 second shots of all these different things. It's insane. At that point, I was like, yeah, this is gonna be brilliant. And I think that's kind of where most of the money maybe went, especially when you see Wolverine's claws. CG is very poor in this movie.
Okay,
very poor. But so to wrap it up, 22% on Rotten Tomatoes, but I'd say it should be like 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, it's not great, but enjoyable sort of action movie. So check it out if you haven't. Okay, maybe.
I'm never going to see it.
You won't have missed anything. You know, you don't have to feel like on your deathbed. You know, like, well, maybe if you haven't seen Citizen Kane or something, you might feel regret. But you won't feel that for X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Excellent.
Yeah, so until 2 weeks from now, I think. Or do you have...
No, yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another fantastic show.
Yeah, I bought a load of comics.
Yeah.
But I haven't read them.
Yeah.
So,
me.
I don't know what'll happen between now and the podcast. Probably I'll get through some of them.
And to play us out is a song by Jeffrey Lewis.
Maybe. If we get clearance.
We're in contact with the record company who haven't got back to us yet.
Yeah.
So, if you hear a Jeffrey Lewis song, we've gotten clearance. And if you hear... Seal's Kiss from a Rose.
Why are we looking for clearance? I mean, never look for clearance for anything else.
Mainly because, yes, that is strange. I think we're on. The only reason I thought I'd ask them, you know, was because.
In case Jeffrey Lewis himself listened.
We listened to this interview, and, you know.
It doesn't seem like he's too up on technology.
All right.
I'm just kidding.
In which case, here's Jeffrey Lewis, and we'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, take care.
They tried to get me with a TV show, but I wouldn't have none of it, no, no, no. Standards and values on a living room screen, Sarah Jessie Parker acting mean. She's got it all, that's what they want you to think, but if you read between the lines, you'll see the missing link. She's just a puppet in their indoctrination plan. Be like me, girls, and become a real man. Live to the full, always act flash. Don't use your brains when your body makes the splash. Oh yeah, oh yeah. But I've got it all up here, see, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, they think they got it all out there, see. Well, they can fuck off, cause they ain't got me, and they can't buy my dignity, oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell ya, I got it up here, see. They tried to get me in the supermarket store, bought what I wanted and they said buy more. Mountains of crap that nobody really needs, bright colored wrappers to suit assorted greeds. They know it all, that's what they want you to think, but if you read between the lines you'll see the missing link. Buy this product, pay for the crap, 1/4 for the product, 3/4 for the wrap. Be a happy family like the people on the pack, pay up to the profit and you'll never look back. Oh yeah, oh yeah. But I've got it all up here, see, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, they think they got it all out there, see. Well, they can fuck off, cause they ain't got me, and they can't buy my dignity, oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell ya, I got it up here, see. They tried to get me with their learning and their books, their deep understanding and intelligent looks. All of the time they never ever saw me, they were just looking for what they wanted to see. They know it all, that's what they want you to think, but if you read between the lines you'll see the missing link. The books are easy backups for what they do to you, they'll bind you up as slaves for the privileged few. Prove lies with history, say that's how it always was, slavery or mastery, be one of us, oh yeah. Oh yeah, but I've got it all up here, see, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, they think they got it all out there, see? Well, they can fuck off, cause they ain't got me, and they can't buy my dignity, oh yeah. Oh yeah, let me tell ya, I got it up here, see? They tried to get me with religion and with Christ. They said I'd get to heaven if I acted real nice. But they were just preparing a crucifix for me. A life of guilt, of pain, of holy misery. They know it all, it's what they want you to think. But if you read between the lines, you'll see the missing link. The Bible's just a blueprint for their morality scam. Another load of shit about how it's never been. They stand there in the pulpit, doling out their lies, offering forgiveness, then they talk of eyes for eyes. Oh yeah, oh yeah, but I got it all up here, see? Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, they think they got it all out there, see? Well, they can fuck off, cause they ain't got me, and they can't buy my dignity. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell ya, I got it up here, see? They tried to get me, but I won't be got. They say I'm a misfit, but I say I'm not. I never set out to exploit another. Those smarmy bastards would steal from their mother. They got it all, it's what they want you to think. But if you read between the lines, you'll see the missing link. They plundered and slaughtered in the name of truth. Acceptance of normality is what they want from you as proof. They think they've got the answers, but there's something that they miss. Their cup which overfloweth is just filled up with piss. Oh yeah. Let me tell ya, I got it up here, see?